Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Your questions or comments are welcome by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Last month, in August, the Benton County Board of Commissioners hosted a celebration of service at the Corvallis Benton County Public Library for retiring District Attorney John M. Haraldson, a trailblazer in Oregon's legal community. He was the first Latino DA in Oregon history, and he joins me on the exchange now. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on the show.
Glad to have you. First things first, how do you feel?
You know, I feel an incredible sense of gratitude and, I will also say liberation, where I'm not carrying the stress and responsibility 24/7 of being the top public safety officer for Benton County.
Well, let's talk about your extraordinary career. How long was it, and how did it start?
You know, I began working as an intern prosecutor for the city of Albany in 1988. And from there, I went to Linn County to serve as a deputy district attorney. I spent another 12 years there before I came across the river, as we say, to Benton County. Now, just kind of an interesting twist there. Part of the county seat in Linn County is actually in Benton County, and vice versa. Part of Corvallis, a little sliver of it, is in Linn County. So there was always a bit of a connection there that seemed kind of natural. I came over to Benton County in 2022 to serve as chief deputy. And then in the beginning of 2007, I was appointed by Governor Ted Kulongowski to complete the term of my predecessor. And then I was selected in 2008 as district attorney. So it's been in total 36 years in prosecution.
Well, let's go back to when you were a kid, because something motivated you, something steered you into the legal profession. And there, at that time, wasn't anyone like you here in Oregon in that role. Tell me about your childhood.
You bet. Well, you know what's interesting is I was not one of those kids who decided at an early age, I want to be district attorney one day, or for that matter, you know, district attorney or a lawyer. You know, I was a kid who, lived in Mexico and lived in the United States. And we moved a lot. I like to refer to it as being somewhat nomadic. And so you make a lot of adjustments in those times. And I think from those experiences, I really developed a strong sense of or desire for fairness, for equity, for justice. But I also know that my mother, who faced great challenges in her generation, would tell my brothers and I, in Spanish, deben ser doctores, abogados, o sacerdotes. You should be a doctor, lawyer, or a priest. And, I went to college, played some basketball in college, and kind of tried to figure out what I wanted to do along the way. I really enjoyed philosophy, and I got a degree in that, but I realized that somebody wasn't going to pay me to sit on a hill and think. Mm-hmm. So I had to make another plan, and I remembered my mother's words and decided, well, I think I'll go to law school. Now, I really didn't know what I was getting into, but I knew that it was something that my mother wanted me to do. But along the way, I discovered that it was really in the wheelhouse of what defines me and my desires to pursue justice through the truth. That internship that I took in Albany really, really brought clarity to me that this was a purpose-filled, career that was so meaningful to me that I stayed with it for 36 years.
Well, you say you grew up in Mexico. What part, and when did your family move to the United States?
Well, we're actually going back and forth to some degree. I have three brothers. There's four of us total. And we're each separated by 1 year. My two oldest brothers started elementary school in Mexico, and we moved up to the state of Washington when I was 4 years old, but we'd already been spending some time in the U.S. Today, I think they call that kind of like an anchor baby is the term that's used for some of us anyway. But in either case, we lived in Monterrey, Nuevo León, which is in the sort of north central part of the country. It's the industrial capital of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And what cultural identifier are you more comfortable with, Hispanic or Latino? And tell me the difference.
You bet. Well, first, you know, I consider myself old school Mexican. Now, I'm not stuck on a particular label. If somebody refers to me as Hispanic or as Latino, you know, it is, you know, those are labels that are frequently used. So I guess I don't see that so much as a defining piece as much as I recognize that we're communicating with each other and having discussions about perhaps clarifying what that means with each other. You know, I would say that by heritage, I am a Mexican American, I have really been blessed with the opportunity to grow up in two rich cultures.
So why do you suppose you were the first Hispanic, Latino, or Mexican-American DA in the state of Oregon? Isn't this a profession that's widely pursued by Americans of Hispanic descent?
Well, you know, this is an interesting question. And you know, I've thought about this a lot because, you know, again, my mission in life was not to become the first Latino district attorney in the state of Oregon. Rather, my mission was the pursuit of justice through the truth. It just happened that my own mission aligned with the timing of, you know, realizing that position in history. And, you know, I'm certainly grateful to everyone who sacrificed to give me that opportunity and, you know, hope that I have made everyone proud in being able to achieve that and to do that in a way that has been recognized so well.
I'm talking with retired county district attorney John Haroldson, the first Latino DA in Oregon history. Now, John, in this year's election, we're faced with a choice at the top of the ticket between a former district attorney, a woman of color, and a man who some say is intentional about destroying the administrative state and weaponizing the powers of state attorneys general and county DAs. You have any thoughts about that?
I do. And, you know, I'm inspired a little bit by the previous segment and, you know, the question that came up about wanting to go back in, you know, to some prior history where there was a dominant culture, you know, held perhaps a different dynamic than we find ourselves today. And where that takes me is this, is the United States was founded on principles that we should never forget, beginning with the Declaration of Independence, that humans have inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that doesn't mean that just for some people, this is a set of rights that we went to war and blood was shed. So when we think about life, liberty, to be free, and to the pursuit of happiness, that's opportunity and joy. To what extent are we committed to those fundamental principles? I also go to the preamble of the Constitution of the United States. In the preamble of the Constitution of the United States, you have, in essence, the purpose for the rest of the document to follow. In other words, everything that's here is to accomplish these goals. And one of those is justice. And so when we ask ourselves about divisiveness and hurting each other and, the violence that we see, it's a reminder for us to reexamine whether we as a country are aligned with these fundamental principles. And to the degree that we are not aligned with that, then, you know, I really think we have to ask some serious questions of whether or not we're moving in the right direction. And that's why voting is important, in order to ensure that we are remaining committed to the fundamental principles for this country.
Well, John, as someone who's represented the rule of law in this state, and you've watched the laws change over time, what are your thoughts about the condition of the blurred intersection between law and politics today?
Well, I have similar thoughts to that and the blurred intersection of government and religion. You know, there's each serves its purpose, but when you blur those two, then, you know, you can certainly create a lot of confusion, but it can move you away from the sort of fundamental equilibrium that that defines how governments should function. Just to elaborate that just a little bit is to think about this. If we ask ourselves the simple question, what is the purpose of government? What is the purpose of government? And, you know, you go back and examine, okay, well, we've got a group of people. There may be threats. They may need protection, shelters, food. You know, what are the basic needs that we have? And then beyond that, once those needs are met, what other functions are critical for us to have a thriving society? And so, again, my concern is that oftentimes when these lines get blurred, we wind up somehow becoming removed from the connection to these underlying principles that define how thriving governments function, what is needed for that.
So what advice would you give to youth of color today who may be thinking about a career in the legal profession?
My advice is, first, that you may hear the cliche that there's too many lawyers. But the reality is, lawyers of color have been underrepresented in the legal profession. And the need is great. The need will continue to grow, given the fact that the demographic in the United States will change. That is inevitable. And to what extent are we prepared to have our leadership reflect the communities that are being served? In order to pursue justice through the truth and to do that in the best possible way, we need to make sure that we as communities are engaged in participating at all levels, which means that there's a responsibility for us to prepare ourselves for those positions, to be able to ensure that we're part of that. Otherwise, you know, we run into a challenge that I will share with you that is a great example of something, an injustice that can happen despite the best of intentions. Years ago, when I began to work as a young deputy district attorney, I appeared in court, and there was a young man who was facing a misdemeanor charge. I don't recall what it is today, but he was a monolingual Spanish speaker. Mm-hmm. The judge arraigned him, read him the charges, told him the maximum penalties, and then asked him, how do you plead guilty or not guilty? Well, the interpreter in that case was, we didn't have the same standards in our system for interpreters. And so his skill level wasn't aligned with what we see today. And so the judge asked him, how do you plead? And the interpreter said, como se declara, culpable o sin culpa. And the young man says, culpable. And the interpreter says, he says guilty, Your Honor. And so I stood up in the court and I said, I want the record to reflect that Spanish is my first language, and the response was one of ambivalence. On behalf of the state, I'm asking that an attorney be appointed so that he can have a meaningful opportunity to participate in this process. Now, both the judge and the interpreter were really good people.
John, unfortunately, we have run out of time, and I really appreciate you being here. Please enjoy your retirement, but I've got to end the show. Thanks so much.
No worries.
That's all the time we have. Thanks for joining the JX today. Have a nice day.